Here now is Matt Austin and Ginger Gadsden with Florida's Fourth Estate. Sponsored by Light Orlando. Delivering hope together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Florida's Fourth Estate. Today, we have a fantastic edition for you because every once in a while, there is a figure out there who is larger than life, right?
And they loom large.
We use that sometimes figuratively saying, oh, but I mean it this time.
Yes.
We have a larger than life.
We love characters, today. People who you've never met before, someone like this. So say someone was a college basketball player, a WWE superstar, an American gladiator, and now they're the deputy mayor of their local town.
I thought you were talking about me until that last one.
Until that last one is what separated you. And I would just like to say this before we take the three shot. All right. I'm 6 feet 2 inches tall. You're 5'6". She's 6 feet tall. And we're about to look tiny. So let's introduce you to Matt Morgan.
I feel like we need to just give him a rip. You know, you walk into an arena and, you know, when we were doing like mic checks for this, you said, I'm a low talker. I was like, you don't have to yell, sir. You don't have to yell.
You can't be loud and big. It's just not fair.
Nice to see you.
Thank you guys very much for having me. This is a huge honor. Thank you.
Well, it's our pleasure, and we wanted to have you on for a few reasons. We thought you were a fascinating character for a long time. We also got to do an event with you with Next Step Orlando, where we were both after, like, man, that guy is so cool and kind and warm, not what you would expect.
You're like a big teddy bear, because you have to be gentle with, you know, we were out there with people who are walking the red carpet, who have these different abilities, right? Yep. And so you were cheering them on and their biggest advocate, and I just loved seeing that. I was exhausted at the end of it, and you were still going.
To be fair, though, an hour after I got home, it hit me.
We all nap well after that, right? Yeah.
It's an emotional day.
And one of the reasons we found out you're so good with those kids is because you have a son named Jackson who was born with autism. And one of the reasons we're talking to you this month, it is Autism Awareness Month, and you have a big walk that we're going to be talking about as well during this show.
Yeah, yes, sir. My son's Jackson. He's 10 years old. He was diagnosed as nonverbal autistic. So for him to communicate, There's certain hand signs he'll give us, sign language, but more or less it's him pushing and nudging us in directions of things that he wants, and he'll point that. And I know everything he wants because I'm his dad.
Right.
And same with my wife Larissa, his mom. But we're trying to work with him on expanding that, because we're not always gonna be around. So it's a scary thing, right? Mm-hmm. While at the same time, it's something that we're very passionate about, not just because, for our own son's sake, but for our entire neurodiverse community. It's not getting smaller, it's growing exponentially. So there's more and more diagnoses each year of kids being diagnosed on the spectrum. So we need to do more to be able to mishmash neurotypical along with neurodiverse kids, not just kids, adults as well, because they've got to be able to communicate with one another, because that's where the world is headed.
Okay, so for a lot of people, you're talking a different language, right?
Yeah.
You are right now. When you say neurodiverse, and what was the other one you
just said? Neurotypical.
What are those two things, and what should we understand about them?
So I grew up with attention deficit disorder, and back in the 80s, they would group you in what was called special education back then.
Mm-hmm.
Today, where we are in Florida, we don't have that. They call it something different today. I would be called special education, and the normal kids would be called the normal kids, right? Or average or whatever. We try not to use those terms, because when you're on the ASD spectrum or you have autism, it's not about them being smart or not. It's about they process things differently than you and I do. They see things different than you and I do. They taste things very differently than you and I do. Mm-hmm. They definitely can hear things differently than you and I do. But it doesn't make them lesser than. It really doesn't. And I'd argue more of their senses are even heightened. So, for instance, my son Jackson, you'll see in every photo, every video, he's always wearing headphones.
Yeah.
Because we can't predict how he's going to metabolize listening to a certain noise that we can't hear. I mean, for the life of us, we'll be in the house, there's not a pit, you couldn't even hear a pin drop, right? And Jackson will start squeezing his ears, getting his headphones on real quick and screaming, because he's hearing something that we're not hearing. And so part of me thinks, because he can't speak, that his other senses have been heightened. So in this case, his hearing has been heightened, very, very sensitive.
Mm-hmm. And so he's hearing things that aren't even on the spectrum of
like that your ears can. Yeah, that we're not hearing.
So that's a problem that you've got to deal with without even really knowing what he's dealing with at that time. That sounds like a real challenge.
Yeah, so 4th of July, I'll never forget this. We had him in the bathtub earlier that day because we're hoping we can get him to sleep before the fireworks would start, because that's hell on earth for him. Mm-hmm. And so he's in the bathtub and he's grabbing his ears. I'm like, there's nothing. There's just the water. Let's turn off the water. Wasn't that either. I go outside to grab something out of my truck and I hear like miles away just a little like bottle rocket pop. It was like that loud, like pop. He's hearing that miles away inside the house with the loud water running in the tub. So that's just one. And again, to know one kid with autism is no one kid with autism. Mm-hmm. There's no two cases alike. In the world of autism, they're considered like snowflakes, each case. So if I can, on April 27th, my wife and I, Larissa Morgan, worked really, really hard each year in the last 2 years of being able to produce this year's upcoming City of Longwood's second annual Walk for Autism Awareness and Inclusion. A big component of being an autistic parent is that each week I'll learn of a new service that I wasn't aware was previously in our community. In Central Florida, I will argue, we have such a bevy of services. You constantly hear complaints that we don't. I argue both sides of that. We have many services here. And part of it is we don't know. There's so many families that just don't know about it. Mm-hmm. There's a service that can help our kids and our young adults. I just don't want to say kids when I say that. So for this Walk for Autism Awareness and Inclusion, we have over 50 vendors that serve a space, that have some type of service they do in the world of autism. Speech therapy, occupational therapy, equine therapy, you name it therapy. We will have it there. Free of charge. We don't charge the vendors to be there at all. We don't charge anybody to come to the event. It's free for everybody. But the point is, once we complete the walk around Ryder Park at in Longwood, we have them come right when they finish the walk. The finish line is they have to walk through the vendor booths, because that's the whole point of this. The whole hook of this is my wife and I wanted to introduce these services to these families that don't know these services are out there, that these families are going to need. Mm-hmm. And the main thing is when our kids hit 18, everything falls off the cliff in regards to services, right? My son's beautiful now. We get all these great comments about him and on social media, but let's see what everybody thinks when he's 7'2", 300 pounds with a goatee down here. When he's a man. Right.
Genetics. Yeah. You can't fight that.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't think about that future specifically to your child.
So, because he's going to be, he's already is a mo. He's huge. And he's not going to get any shorter. So, but my point is, like, when they do hit 18, the services do fall off very, very steeply. So we'll have different vendors there as well that specifically hire autistic adults, neurodiverse adults, and ones that will train them, ones that will help them learn a specific trade that they might be interested in. It's really, really broad, and I'm really excited about that, because that's the area that we tend to need the most help with in this community, is when our kids hit 18, what's out there for them.
Yeah.
Why do they cut it off? You know, when you talk about aging out, like the foster care system at 18, it's like, great, you're on your own. You've never been on your own before, and suddenly you're on your own. So the same thing with this scenario, they're not ready because it's a different thing, and they're going to need a lifetime of care. Yeah. Are you happy with, it's not where it was even 5 years ago or when your son was born.
True.
But now, I just learned there's a movie coming out with Robert De Niro in it, Ezra, about a child, a young boy who has autism. It's becoming more mainstream to even just talk about it, where people wouldn't talk about it before. Are you kind of happy with the way that's going, at least?
Definitely, because at least it's conversation, and it is being talked about. It's not, my hope is where it's, and I think we're getting there, where it's not just, again, you know, autism families or neurodiverse families like ours with our other neurodiverse families, you know, just talking about this stuff. It's neurotypical families as well now. Like when you go to the second annual Walk for Autism Awareness and Inclusion event, April 27th, 11 a.m. at Ryder Park. In the city of Longwood.
Cheap plug.
You'll see it. You'll see it and you're going to cry. I promise you, you will. I cried like five different times that day because of the coming together and solidarity that I would argue 50% of that audience is neurotypical. that come. And I'm like, what made you come?
Yeah.
You know, I have a kid that's on the spectrum, you know, right. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but what made you come? Just curious.
Just out of curiosity. Yeah.
And it was we wanted to show that we love every kid. Mm-hmm. And they're from our community. We love them. We want to make sure that they know we love them. We don't look at them any differently.
Yeah.
And I hear that from some of the neurotypical kids that went there. That's what I was really like flabbergasted by.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me just more and more want to make this year's even bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see stuff in the media that we never would have seen back in the day. Love on the Spectrum. And I watch that show. I cry every 12 seconds just thinking about these kids on the spectrum and these young adults who are past 18 and they're meeting each other. They're falling in love.
I mean, they have lives.
They have these adorable little relationships that are just so pure and innocent. So fascinating stuff. So I would encourage people to go check out that walk April 27th. That'll be great. I do want to talk about you a little bit, though, here, because
here's
now we have you in the studio.
Here's the pivot.
This is the change, because I was reading up on you for about 4 hours yesterday because the list of things that you've done, college basketball star, which led into the WWF or was it WWE?
Oh,
when
good
you went
question. In? So when I first started, I was on the reality show called MTV/WWF Tough Enough.
It
was produced by WWE and MTV at the time. And then WWF changed their name to World Wrestling Entertainment because the World Wildlife Fund, apparently.
Yes, with that cute little panda.
You can't have that name anymore.
I mean, that's it writes itself, does it not? That comic writes itself.
But what made you think to get into wrestling? Was it your body type? Clearly, did somebody say, what was the initial thing that got you interested?
Since I was 6 years old, every Saturday morning, me and my brother, like most American kids back in the 80s, right? When Hulk Hogan, really popular, right? In the mid-80s. We were glued to that television set. And again, as a kid that got messed with and bullied a little bit, sure, I'm tall and everything like that, but when you're a foot taller than kids that are 4 years older than you, it works the opposite way when you're younger.
Yeah.
And you get bullied because of it, generally. So I'd get screwed with, and I had that escapism from wrestling. Mm-hmm. It was, to me, it was always like comic book, good guy and bad guy, but in real life, on television at least, with real human beings playing the parts versus me reading my comic books.
Who was the guy who stuck out for you and you said, that's my guy?
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, that's in 1984. He won the world championship for the first time, and I saw that as, was I six? I was seven.
Wow.
And so when he tore that yellow shirt,
oh, yeah, I used to go crazy. Yeah. I used to go bonkers.
I was a Hulk Hogan kid, too.
Yeah.
I liked Ric Flair.
Ooh.
He worked with Ric Flair.
Woo!
I did. I beat Ric Flair.
What?
I did.
He was about 72 at the time.
We'll take it. Hey, I'm an equal opportunity butt kicker. What do you want me to tell you? No, I'm
joking. Oh, my gosh.
Come on. No. So did you grow up in the South? Where'd you
go? I'm from South Carolina. But I'm old school South. There's a wrestler who I used to love, and then I turned against wrestling because he got hurt. His name was Igor, and I cried my eyes out because this was the back in the day.
Was that really his name, Igor?
Yeah, that was, well, not, it was his wrestling name.
Have gotten better.
But I loved it because he would bring his little wiener dog with him, and he'd feed his little dog, and then he'd put the dog outside the ring and then whip somebody's butt. And then some guy like came up to him with a slashed, like a broken piece of glass once and just cut him. And I was like, jeez, I am never watching this again.
That's not good.
Kill the wiener dog too?
I was wondering, where that was headed?
Yeah, I know. It was rough. It was rough.
So Ric Flair was like Hulk, I grew up in the Northeast originally. Yeah. So Hulk Hogan, like globally, especially, I shouldn't say that, in the States was super popular. Yeah. But like if you're in the South, Ric Flair was the guy.
Yeah,
he was the guy.
But he's still to this day is considered the greatest of all time. Ric is.
I mean, nobody sold it.
Everyone knows.
I still don't understand how he did that turnbuckle flip thing.
Oh, that was called turnbuckle.
I don't know what it's called, but
yeah,
that was amazing. And so, who was your favorite to get to work with?
Oh, to work with. Ooh. Yeah. Ric Flair, because of 6-year-old Matt Morgan going crazy inside my head.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
I get to wrestle him right now. This is incredible. He was in retirement at that time, and he agreed to come out because we had an important storyline. They needed to get me to become a main event talent at that time for the company I was working for called TNA Wrestling, where I was going to be working Kurt Angle at their biggest pay-per-view of the year. Long story short, to get me there, I needed like a really big win by somebody that meant something. Ric Flair's like, I'm managing, and he was managing me at the time. Ric Flair is my manager.
Oh, so you know him well then.
Yeah. And so he's like, I'm going to come out of retirement. I'm going to wrestle him. And that's what we did. And it was awesome. He didn't have to do that.
No.
And
that's great.
He just did that for you, basically.
It was very, very kind of him.
Yeah. That's awesome. That really was very gracious of him. Yeah. And did that really just kind of send you on your way?
Isn't that the biggest compliment when some wrestler will have you beat them?
Definitely.
Not to give anything away.
No. Folks, we have some stand-ins. Easter Bunny spoilers if you got it. If you didn't know that already.
Turn away if you still believe.
So, but sincerely, it does. Yeah, it does. 100%. Yeah. Because, and then I got toward the end of my career, I felt the same way. If I saw a guy that was on the come up and was super hungry, really was paying his dues and really, really wanted this, I'd gladly put him over. We say put him over or let them beat us because it would mean more to them.
That's awesome.
Their future success. Yeah. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it is. And I know, okay, so we have to ask you, headlines have been just raging about the WWE these days, specifically with the boss, or I should say former boss over there, Vince McMahon.
Very important. Former boss.
Yes, no longer in charge of things. Though I'm not sure, I guess it's kind of nebulous whether his family's still in charge or not. So I'm curious. Tell us about what interactions you had with Vince McMahon. Were they positive? Were they negative? What happened?
I met Vince McMahon before I got chosen to be a part of that reality show on MTV and WWF that they co-produced at the same time called Tough Enough. I met him at WWE Titan Tower, the headquarters that WWE is headquartered at in Stamford, Connecticut. Yeah. I'm from Fairfield, Connecticut, two towns over. So a friend of mine used to write for their magazine. And he knew I wanted to be a wrestler real bad. Back then, they didn't tell you can go to training schools and things like that like they tell you today, right? The cat wasn't fully out of the bag yet about pro wrestling being a work or entertainment just yet.
Right.
It wasn't there yet. So I went every Friday night to this gym to hopefully bump into Vince McMahon at his own, headquarters, gym. And luckily, I did. After about 6 months of doing it, bumped into me, looked up at me, asked me how tall I was. I told him 7 feet. And at the time, I was really big. I was like 380 pounds. I was overweight, if anything. But again, world of wrestling, that plays good.
I like that, yeah.
So he told me they're doing a reality show, and he gave me a couple people's contacts information. And then from there, I ended up getting picked on that reality show. And the rest is history. So my first interaction was that. Mm-hmm. And then once I got on the WWE roster and I was on SmackDown, I was always very comfortable going to his office to talk to him about characters, and
just walk in.
Definitely got a knock. But we had a lot of talents that were always very intimidated to talk to him because he has a very big presence, and I do think he would do it on purpose in a way to kind of intimidate some people because he's obviously a very insecure person. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I never had any bad interactions with him, if I'm being honest. So I was absolutely flabbergasted when I saw and shocked. The news on what he has been accused of.
Right.
But, man, shocked.
Yeah. And I know you're on the outside of it, but when you saw it,
I'm an old man now.
But you've kind of been in and out, and you have a podcast about wrestling that people can definitely go and listen to. And I was just curious, was it shocking for the community, or have there been sort of rumblings that something weird was going on with this guy?
And if you guys have read, these accusations, good Lord.
They're
terrifying. It's something out of a horror movie. Mm-hmm. That's not hyperbole. That's legit how I felt. I couldn't continue reading. I didn't want to continue to it.
Because if that is swirling around, people are going to talk. So that had to have been kept undercover.
Who the heck?
Who would cover that up?
I would like to think that, right? Who the heck would cover that up? You'd think they wouldn't. So I don't know. I really don't. I just know today, though, they made a major sale. And that company is now under completely new ownership.
Is it? Okay.
Complete top to bottom.
Did they merge with the UFC or something?
Great,
like that?
Yes. So it's the same company that owns UFC now owns WWE. Mm-hmm. I'm forgetting the gentleman's name, but anyways,
Dana White and the Fertittas.
Ari Emanuel.
Oh, okay,
is the head of it, and The Rock has now been put on the WWE's board of directors. That's a great move.
Wow. Yeah. Well, smart. Talk about a PR move. Yeah.
And a guy who's very well liked everywhere he goes. And now The Rock is back on WWE television right now.
I saw it, yeah.
And so the WWE has made a very good move of having new ownership, obviously. They're going in the right direction. They made, was it $5 billion? It was like I hope I'm saying that correct, $5 billion deal with Netflix now. Mm-hmm. They're no longer going to, you know, be on television. They're going to be going on Netflix, which is a smart move as well.
Is that enough, though, for people to forget this last chapter?
Oh, no. Yeah. I think that's two different. It'd be like the New York Yankees. George Steinbrenner did something, you know, bizarre, insane like this. It would be like, oh, that sucks. Yeah. As a Yankee fan, I'm going to have to always think about that every time I watch the Yankees now. That sucks. Yeah. And that's kind of what I felt when I was watching WWE after this happened. I was like, I don't want to be thinking about that. We're supposed to be escaping from our everyday.
It's tainted it for forever almost.
I hope not forever.
Yeah. But for a long time.
Because a lot of us still meet at age 47. We will use that as our way to get away from our 9-to-5, our everyday responsibilities, sure. Our everyday worries or stresses. That's what wrestling's supposed to be for. Yeah. That's what it's there for. Mm-hmm. So hopefully under this new ownership, they'll get people back to that place. But it's got to get, there needs to be a resolution here with what's happened to him, obviously, first.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, do you have another question?
No, I have a very serious question, but you go first.
Well,
no, it's not.
No, you're not.
At all.
I know you a lot better than that. She asks the fun questions. So,
this is heavy.
I want to know. Well, you walk in here tall, straight. You're 47. Yeah. I'm curious because a lot of the wrestlers who get up close to 50, and a lot of them don't make it to 60.
Yeah.
It was a little known fact. My dad did a little very short period of wrestling a long time ago. He got a very bad injury from it. How is your body after all those years of wrestling?
So good. Very, very lucky that I got out, you know, after 13 years of doing it with very, very minor injuries. I did just have a back surgery last June. Mm. That's my only major surgery I've had from wrestling.
Really? Never a knee? Or
no, I for sure you would think a knee at my height,
for
right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I was always worried about that. But no, you know, knock on wood, so far so good still. But my back, I needed to have surgery on probably back in 2010. Mm-hmm. And I just never heard anybody walk away from a good back surgery saying, hey, how about that back surgery?
Yeah.
So I was always nervous to get it done. I watched Hulk Hogan go through 7 back surgeries where none of them were good. Mm. And I'm like, well, this is Hulk Hogan. He's one of the most popular people on the planet. If he can't get a great back surgery, how am I going to?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it made me very nervous of getting it. But I had no choice after a while where I had to get it. I couldn't sit, couldn't stand, couldn't lay down. So I had to get something done. So they did a minorly invasive procedure, I would say, where they went in and they shaved my spine, my spinal bone down, and so my nerve that wanted to flare up could finally flare up, and then it could decrescendo, and then I could take the swelling back down, and I was no longer in pain.
So were you the one guy who had back surgery and it worked out well?
It did. It really did. I'm playing basketball. I'm able to do lifts.
People are going
to
be calling you asking for your guy.
Heavy weights again in the gym. But I had to slowly come back to it after the surgery.
And that's the thing. You know, you think of wrestling as entertainment, but you put your body on the line every time you're in the ring.
5 days a week of every month of every year, that was my schedule.
That's a lot.
On the road. So that's Saturday you're off, half of a Sunday. Sunday night you're back out on tour.
And you have to work out in between all that. It's huge, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay. So my question was, you know, you're in the ring and you're a character already. You don't need to draw any more attention to yourself, but you have to pick out what you're going to wear.
Mm-hmm.
Who does that? Who decides? What do you decide?
And how do you pick out your Speedo?
Yeah.
Pretty much. No,
you didn't wear much.
I know. But it's still something, and you got to think about it. It's part of your thing.
I think I'd watch other guys. I'd watch like what Rock wore. I'd watch what Goldberg would wear. I'd watch... Undertaker, I couldn't copy what he would wear, obviously. That being such a definitive character, that's his own, right? But when you're young and you're first starting out in the business, unless they tell you, sometimes they do. Sometimes we have a creative team that might come to you and say, hey, this is your character. You need to wear this to help fit that character better, right? But I really didn't have that type of over-the-top character that was when I walk out, you know exactly what my character was, right? It's just supposed to be big, jacked up guy that you're supposed to be scared of.
That's just you.
Right?
So, I don't know how you ever pulled that off, Matt.
Well, so it's pretty vanilla when you think about it. But so my character was the blueprint, right? Blueprint of the perfect athlete. I was a bad guy. I was a heel. My job was to make the fans boo me and love my opponent. And that was my intent. But what I would wear would just be, normal pair of wrestling trunks and knee pads and not really care. I probably should have in retrospect.
But you were close, I heard, to having a very interesting, I don't know what they call it, what your persona is, because I heard you were almost going to be, was it Kane's younger brother? Because there's the Undertaker. I don't know if you know this.
I don't know this backstory.
Who's legendary funeral, you know, he's like comes out in a casket and he's gigantic like
greatest
Matt.
Greatest of all time.
And then he had a brother named Kane who was just totally creepy. I remember when he came on the scene, all us kids were like, dude, get that guy off my television. This guy's freaking me out.
Scary.
And you were sort of cast to be Kane 2.0 or his younger brother?
His younger brother, Abel. Kane and Abel. So they had
that
me
works.
They,
that
they had me wearing a mask and practicing every day in that mask. It was very difficult to do. I couldn't do it very well. But I was all set to them bringing me back to television. So WWE would have like Ohio Valley Wrestling, which at the time was their minor league company. And they'd go have you go try stuff out there. Mm-hmm. And then when it's time to bring you up, they'd bring you up to SmackDown or Monday Night Raw, WWE's two flagship television shows. And so I was always on SmackDown. And so they had me trying on wearing this mask for like 6 months. And then they bring me back up. And then they don't have me wear the mask at all. I'm not going to be called Abel. And I'm like, how do you guys
No make-? Explanation.
So just in the back room somewhere, somebody decided.
No.
Well, no, I'll tell you, Vince McMahon had me come into his office. They were in Chicago. And he's always wanted to put this stuttering character on somebody. And he was like, and the way he was explaining it to me was pretty, pretty funny. And the whole thing was, is like, look, you're a college graduate. You're big, tall. You have all these great things going about you. You need an Achilles heel. He goes, for you to be successful, especially as a villain, you need that Achilles heel, that proverbial banana peel that you slip on where your opponent can beat you, right? Otherwise, who the hell's going to beat you? Then people are going to be bored by that anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I still never understood why he felt like, okay, then let's have the guy that graduated with a communications degree in public speaking with a stuttering character. But nonetheless,
oh my gosh,
my aunt stuttered. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do the best of my ability. I'm going to try to, you know, I'm being challenged here with a character that I've never done before. But screw it, I'm going to do it and try to do it to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
But would I put that on me? No.
Yeah, of course. It didn't make sense, right?
That'd be such a challenge because that's a real acting.
It really is. And then also when you're being trained like I was, you're taught when they say jump, you say how high. If they put you in any character, you're like, sure.
Just do it.
I can do it.
Just do it. Yeah.
You're not going to be like, Vince, you know, I really don't want to.
That's a terrible
Here's
idea.
What I
that's
think
a terrible
I should
idea.
Be doing.
Yeah.
Right. Paint me in gold. Oh I'll God. Come in glowing, flexing the whole
I
time.
I just love the thing that just listening to
like,
you
that
two,
could work. That could work.
Oh, my God. He's trying to invent a new character. It's like listening to you two talk about the Bold and the Beautiful characters. Like, it's like, remember back in the day, that was so-and-so's daughter's son's nephew. That's like the two of you just now had
oh, that's
that
exactly
moment.
What that
that's
is.
All that yeah. is. So we just call
it's
it something else.
It's a male soap opera. Yeah. That's fair.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah, it yeah.
Is. What is it? Because you're not like, you're a very normal, when you meet you, you're just a normal, calm guy. And was it hard for you to become an actor and be this huge personality? Was that difficult?
No, because with that ADHD I have, right? ADHD, you're always after that pat on the back, that attaboy, that good job, Matt, since I was a little kid. And still today, it is. One of the reasons I like being elected office in a small city like Longwood, because I get to go see that attaboy when I'm at the gas pump at a gas station or I'm standing in line at Publix.
You can't hide.
I get that instant that gratification, that feedback right away. I love that. Yeah. But so back to your question, it's I think you love the attention that it gives you, if I'm being honest. And if you're in an arena with 60,000 people, your job is to make them boo or cheer you, and you're succeeding at it. It is a high I could never explain to you guys. And I mean, you see it with other talents that say they retire, but they keep coming back.
Yeah.
Because of that, it's that high. It's that
like,
high
you
that
don't
they
have
chase.
To work anymore. Just give it up. And it's hard to give that up.
They don't want
to
give it. People will just like, will minimize it. Like, oh, they can't get out of the spotlight. It's not just the spotlight. It's the ability to legitimately entertain so many people and get them to forget, at least the way I always looked at it, forget what they got going on in their everyday lives. And for 2 hours, they're there. And if it's with me, my match, they're there for 5 minutes watching my match. And my job is to get them to stop thinking about what worries they got going on in the world. Are they dealing with cancer? Did they just lose a loved one? Did they just lose their job? What happened? Yeah. So I put all that, I would put that much thought into it every time I'd get out there and try to bust my tail on television and do whatever I was asked to do, bad guy or good guy.
Sure.
I bet he gets that same feeling when he's heading up a Longwood City Commission meeting.
rousing applause.
The electricity is palpable.
Do you get booed, though?
As we're talking about waste management. Yeah, what has been that transition? Before we let you go, I want to ask you the transition to city government, where you've been the mayor, now you're the deputy mm-hmm. mayor of Longwood. How has that been for you?
I love it. I love the... like I said, because Longwood's such a small city, we're only 16,000 residents, yeah. right? So I've always chased that high of people like, Matt, you spread yourself way too thin, you do way too much, and da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, well, how's that a bad thing? That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But it's because I get that instant gratification. I get that instant feedback of, Matt, I really appreciate you doing that for me, Matt. Thank you.
Yeah.
That is the best feeling in the world. That's the best feeling I've ever had since being in a ring and being able to control an audience of 60,000 people of doing my job of making them boo me, or from the good guy making them cheer me
mm-hmm. without getting body slammed.
It's a great gift.
No back surgery necessary.
No more. Yes. No more being dropped on the back of my neck for a living anymore.
All right, Matt Morgan, fascinating character, deputy mayor of Longwood. You can look up plenty of his charades from American Gladiators and WWE on YouTube, but mostly go check him out at the walk, the Autism Walk, April
27th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Reiter Park, R-E-I-T-E-R Park in Longwood, a.k.a. Strongwood.
Strongwood, baby. Yes. I like it. Matt, well, you're the epitome of that.
Thank you, guys. Thank you both. Thanks, very Matt. Much.
It's appreciate you having it.
And thank you for watching Florida's Fourth Estate. You can download it from wherever you listen to podcasts or watch anytime on News 6+.